The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I'm Doris Hyde for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Vision News. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from UPI Disability Rights Activist Julie Heumann has passed at age 75. From standtogether.org, the AccessOS app to get 911 services. From NFB.org, medical device non-visual accessibility act. Can't read my own handwriting. From Forbes, Kai Owens and guide dog selections. From bigthink.com, tirzepatide for weight loss. So let's get started. From upi.com, disability rights activist Judy Heumann dies at age 75. March 6th, UPI, Judy Heumann, H-E-U-M-A-N-N, a lifelong disability rights activist who worked under two Democratic presidential administrations, has died at the age of 75. Heumann died Saturday afternoon in a statement published to her website. Born in 1947 in Philadelphia, Heumann contracted polio at age two. She then surmounted obstacles just to attend school, eventually graduating from Long Island University in 1969, and then from the University of California, Berkeley, with a master's degree in public health in the 1970s. Heumann spent much of her life dedicated to fighting for the rights of those with disabilities and served as Assistant Secretary of the Office of Special Education and Rehabilitation Services in the administration of President Bill Clinton. She also worked as the first Special Advisor for International Disability Rights at the State Department during the administration of President Barack Obama. Judy Heumann dedicated her life to the fight for civil rights, starting as a young organizer at Camp Jened, J-E-N-E-D, and later helping lead the disability rights movement, Obama tweeted on Sunday. Michelle and I were fortunate to work with Judy over the years and are thinking of her family and friends. Camp Jened was a Catskills-based summer camp for people with disabilities that Heumann attended in the 1960s and where she worked as a camp counselor in the 1970s. According to her website, several disability rights movement leaders came from the camp, which was the topic of the 2020 Oscar-nominated documentary Crip Camp. In 1970, she sued the New York Board of Education after it refused to give her a teaching license because of her physical disability. And she won, becoming the first teacher in the state to use a wheelchair. In the late 1970s, Heumann was instrumental in the signing and enactment of Section 504 of the Rehabilitation Act, which prohibits public institutions, universities, or federal agencies from discriminating against disabled people. In a statement on Sunday, President Joe Biden called Heumann a trailblazer, a rolling warrior for disability rights. Her courage and fierce advocacy resulted in the Rehabilitation Act, Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, and the Americans with Disabilities Act, landmark achievements that increased access to education, the workplace, housing, and more for people with disabilities, Biden said in a statement. The president said he knew Heumann for a long time and had hosted a meeting with her in the White House when he was vice president during the Obama administration. Her legacy is an inspiration to all Americans, including many talented public servants with disabilities in my administration, he said. Jill and I send our deepest condolences to Judy's husband, Jorge Pineda, and their entire family. Heumann had also served as co-chair of the Human Rights Watch's Disability Rights Advisory Committee and joined the board of directors in 2020. She was a role model for how fierce activism can transform the world and schooled us on why inclusion matters, Amy Rao, co-chair of the Human Rights Watch board, said in a statement. She was a legend. From standtogether.org, 7 quick facts about AccessOS, A-C-C-E-S-S-O-S, a text-to-911 app that triages emergency responses and gets people the help they actually need. The AccessOS app is poised to offer both accessibility and unparalleled triage abilities that will free up emergency responders. For many Americans, 911 is synonymous with immediate rescue. Call the number and the police will be on the scene near instantaneously, equipped to handle any situation. But for Gabriella Wong's father, this wasn't the case. Wong grew up communicating with two deaf parents in American Sign Language. By most measures, they were able to live as any other family, until Wong's father got into a car accident. Unable to speak over the phone himself, he had to text Wong to ask her to call 911 for him. Later, when her father's gallbladder ruptured, he did the same. But Wong missed the texts. During one of the most vulnerable, desperate moments of his life, he couldn't contact 911 to get help, says Wong. He almost died because of this. Founded by Wong, AccessOS is a text-to-911 app that hopes to change that. By providing language and disability-inclusive options to get in touch with 911, emergency services are accessible to anyone. But access to emergency services is only part of the problem with today's 911 system. Additionally, AccessOS can triage calls and direct them toward the service most appropriate for the call. Though the triage service is not a live part of the app yet, it is expected to be available in quarter two of 2023. It will work as a series of questions the caller will be asked about the kind of emergency they are having. This will help 911 respond to the call and will redirect calls that are better served by 988, the dialing code launched in July of 2022 that routes callers to the National Suicide Prevention Hotline, and other support services. This has the potential to lift a major burden on law enforcement. Here are seven things to know about 911 and AccessOS. Number one, the AccessOS app offers more specialized responders. Law enforcement carries the burden of being the de facto responder for all problems, even when they are not the best suited response. Without knowing the appropriate service to reach out to, many people default to calling 911, meaning that police officers' time is sometimes allotted toward non-emergency services when it is needed elsewhere. One of the benefits of AccessOS is that it would be able to tailor the emergency response to the crisis at hand. They do this by asking questions that get at the heart of the emergency. Wong says that one of the early concerns with the app was that users didn't always want police to respond. Some calls, mental health emergencies, domestic situations that don't include weapons, suicidal ideation, erratic behavior calls, and more, require a different kind of response, and police may not be the best call. Number two, triaging 911 calls will lessen the burden on police officers. Police officers are the de facto first responders to every 911 call, even though many calls need other kinds of services. The fact is, at least 20% of 911 calls are either mental health or substance abuse issues that do not need police intervention. As a solution, AccessOS can match the caller with the responder who can best suit their needs, leaving police officers freed up to respond to the calls where they are most needed. In San Francisco, for example, there are specific crisis response teams who can be called out for a problem stemming from someone living on the streets. Other cities have similar crisis response teams who are trained to de-escalate and give aid to people who need a different kind of help. Additionally, Wong says some calls can simply be solved over the phone, eliminating the need for any dispatch services at all. It's a win-win for everyone. Number three, 911 would need an expensive update to be able to accommodate what AccessOS can do now. When 911 was built in the 1960s, Americans only had landlines. In today's era of mobile phones, 911's systems aren't engineered to receive texts, and it would require a costly equipment overhaul for this to be possible everywhere. While it is possible to text 911 in some areas of the country, it isn't available everywhere, and it doesn't offer triage capabilities in the same way AccessOS does. The earliest that nationwide emergency help could be available via text to 911 is 2032. For those left vulnerable by communication barriers, waiting that long isn't an option. Number 4. Inspired by her father, Wong created AccessOS to provide emergency help accessible by text. Today, 65 million Americans don't have access to rapid emergency help. Getting in touch with 911 can be a struggle for those who are deaf or hard of hearing, and people with speech disabilities, or who speak only limited English. In the case of domestic violence survivors, speaking aloud to emergency services may put them in danger. The AccessOS app offers contact with alternative services, allowing users to access a variety of emergency services such as mental health professionals, social workers, and people who are trained to help in emergencies not suited for the fire or police departments. These abilities could potentially be the difference between life and death for people who are unable to make a phone call. Number 5. How to use AccessOS. To use AccessOS in areas where it is available, simply open the app or go to contact911.org in your phone's browser. GPS services will automatically collect your location info. You will then be led through a quick series of prompts, allowing you to provide more details about what happened. The app will then contact 911 using the information you provided. The app also automatically works in the language your phone is set to, meaning that non-native English speakers are able to access emergency services as well. Number 6, the organization that created AccessOS is a nonprofit. The organization wants to use its platform to spread awareness of the issues emergency responders, 911 operators, people who are hard of hearing, and many others are facing, like how 70% of call centers can't receive texts, while 37 million Americans can't hear or speak aloud, and thus can't place calls. Number 7. Look out for AccessOS becoming available in your city. The AccessOS app is currently only available in Santa Fe, New Mexico, but it will be spreading to other cities across the country soon. The app demonstrates that solutions to municipal issues need to be flexible and inclusive of a wide range of people facing different barriers. The best way to make this reality is to do just as Wong did and start with listening to the stories of individuals on the ground, then creating a solution that addresses the challenges they're facing. Learn more about Stand Together's healthcare reform efforts. AccessOS is supported by Stand Together Trust, which provides funding and strategic capabilities to innovators, scholars, and social entrepreneurs to develop new and better ways to tackle America's biggest problems. NFB.org has made a list of their 2023 legislative priorities. Legislative Agenda of Blind Americans, Priorities for the 118th Congress, First Session. The National Federation of the Blind is a community of members and friends who believe in the hopes and dreams of the nation's blind. Every day we work together to help blind people live the lives we want. Websites and Software Applications Accessibility Act. Websites are required by law to be accessible, but without implementing regulations, most businesses and retailers have little understanding of what accessible means. The Websites and Software Applications Accessibility Act will end website and software application inaccessibility for blind Americans. Medical Device Non-Visual Accessibility Act. Inaccessible digital interfaces prevent blind individuals from independently and safely operating medical devices that are essential to their daily healthcare needs. The Medical Device Non-Visual Accessibility Act will end unequal access to medical devices for blind Americans. Blind Americans Return to Work Act. Current Social Security law contains a policy that has the unintended consequence of discouraging blind Americans from maximizing their earnings potential. The Blind Americans Return to Work Act will eliminate the Social Security disability insurance earnings cliff and create a true work incentive for blind Americans. These priorities will remove obstacles to website access, independent living, and maximizing earning potential. We urge Congress to support our legislative initiatives. Further details on NFB.org regarding the Medical Device Non-Visual Accessibility Act. Issue: Inaccessible digital interfaces prevent blind individuals from independently and safely operating medical devices that are essential to their daily health care needs. Medical devices with a digital interface are becoming more prevalent and less accessible for blind Americans. The rapid proliferation of advanced technology is undeniable. Most new models of medical devices, such as glucose and blood pressure monitors, along with the emergence of in-home devices that offer medical care options, such as chemotherapy treatments and dialysis, require consumers to interact with digital displays or other interfaces. This new technology is constantly being developed and deployed without non-visual accessibility as an integral part of the design phase, which creates a modern-day barrier. The inaccessibility of these medical devices is not a mere inconvenience. When accessibility for blind consumers is omitted from the medical technology landscape, the health, safety, and independence of blind Americans are in imminent danger. Telehealth currently makes up 20% of all medical visits, and more healthcare providers are looking to expand telemedicine services, footnote 1. The National Center for Health Statistics also reported in 2021 that 37% of all adults use telehealth, footnote 2. Unfortunately, these visits assume that a person has easy access to accessible medical devices to take their own vital signs. As a result of inaccessibility, blind and low vision Americans are at a distinct disadvantage when it comes to receiving the same virtual health care as their sighted counterparts. Non-visual access is achievable, as demonstrated by several mainstream products. Apple has incorporated VoiceOver, a screen reading function, into all of its products, making iPhones, MacBooks, and Mac desktops and iPads fully accessible to blind people right out of the box. Virtually all ATMs manufactured in the United States are accessible, and every polling place is required to have a non-visually accessible voting machine. Frequently, a simple audio output or tactile feature can make a product accessible at little to no additional cost for the manufacturers. Current disability laws are not able to keep up with advancements due to the expeditious evolution of medical technology and its incorporation into medical devices. Although the Americans with Disabilities Act and other laws require physical accessibility for people with disabilities, for example, wheelchair ramps, braille in public buildings, no laws protect a blind consumer's right to access medical devices. The National Council on Disability concluded that accessibility standards lag behind the rapid pace of technology, which can interfere with technology access, footnote 3. This trend of inaccessibility will continue if accessibility solutions are ignored. Only a fraction of medical device manufacturers have incorporated non-visual access standards into their product design, while others continue to resist these solutions. Solution: Medical Device Non-Visual Accessibility Act. Calls on the Food and Drug Administration, FDA, to promulgate non-visual accessibility regulations for Class 2 and Class 3 medical devices. The FDA will consult with stakeholders with disabilities and manufacturers and issue a note of proposed rulemaking no later than 12 months after the date of the enactment of the Act. No later than 24 months after the date of enactment of the Act, the FDA will publish the final rule, including the non-visual accessibility requirements. Requires manufacturers of Class 2 and Class 3 medical devices to make their products non-visually accessible. Manufacturers will have 12 months following the publication of the final rule to ensure that all the Class 2 and Class 3 medical devices they produce are non-visually accessible. Authorizes the FDA to enforce the non-visual access requirements for Class 2 and Class 3 medical devices. Any manufactured device found to be out of compliance, whether by a public complaint to the FDA or by an independent FDA investigation, will be considered an adulterated product under the FDA. Under the Federal Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act. Manufacturers may file for an exemption for one of the two reasons: clear and convincing evidence that making the medical device non-visually accessible would fundamentally alter the use of the product, or proof that modifying the medical device would create an undue burden for the company. goal, and unequal access to medical devices for blind Americans. Sponsor the Medical Device Nonvisual Accessibility Act. For more information, contact Justin Young, Government Affairs Specialist, National Federation of the Blind. Phone 410-659-9314, extension 2210. Email jyoung@nfb.org or visit www.nfb.org. End notes. Footnote 1. C Center for Connected Medicine, telehealth utilization settles in at 20% or less of medical appointments. Available at a website and hot link. Footnote 2. See National Center for Health Statistics, telemedicine used among adults, United States, 2021. Available at another hot link from the CDC.gov. Number 3, see National Council on Disabilities, National Disability Policy Progress Report. Technology that enables access to the full opportunities of citizenship under the Constitution is a right at 19. Copyright October 7, 2016. Available at ncd.gov Progress Report 2016. That's also a hot link. Here's the article I couldn't get to last week from Forbes.com. For Kai Owens, accessibility isn't all about technology. Accessibility is about companionship, too. Article by Stephen Aquino, A-Q-U-I-N-O, posted February 24th. Longtime readers of this column may recall an interview I did in November 2020 with Thomas Panek, P-A-N-E-K, President and Chief Executive of Guiding Eyes for the Blind. The nonprofit organization whose headquarters are in New York specializes in pairing blind and low vision folks with trained guide dogs. At the time, I reported on Panek's participation in Google's Project Guideline, which uses artificial intelligence and machine learning technology to assist people with vision loss in navigating streets. The project's name is derived from the markings painted on roads known as guidelines. Google's tech was put to the ultimate test when it helped Panek, an avid runner, run a 5K marathon through New York City's Central Park. Over 2 years later, Panek's company returns here, this time for Kai Owens, K-A-I-O-W-E-N-S. I sat down last week with Owens for an interview via video conference. The 19-year-old Owens, a sophomore at the University of Georgia majoring in music theory and jazz, went through Guiding Eyes program with Pride, his German Shepherd guide dog, and the pair graduated last June. A native of Statesboro, Georgia, Owens began experiencing vision loss in early childhood at the age of 10. It wasn't long before he started learning about the myriad assistive technologies for blind and low vision individuals, including starting formal orientation and mobility training. He attended a public high school, enrolled in mainstream classes, and finished by being named valedictorian of his class. Owens described his visual acuity as able to discern general shapes and colors most of the time, albeit not with great detail. Then there's spots particularly around the very center of my vision, around my nasal region, that I don't have anything except light perception, he said. My field of view is very limited in the center and kind of along the edges, too. I have just large spots in my vision where I can't see anything, but where I have just general blurry vision or just blurry vision that I can't read or anything. But I can see some general spatial features, but it's very easy for me to miss things because of those large blind spots. In terms of the assistive technologies he uses from day-to-day living, Owens reads some Braille and touch types on a computer, and has only recently started to embrace screen readers such as the popular JAWS software for Windows. He does the bulk of his work on a PC laptop running JAWS, but his smartphone of choice is an iPhone. In addition, Owens uses a Braille display and a Braille tablet. Owens is excited and intrigued by the advancements in artificial intelligence we'll have on assistive technology for the disability community in the coming years. I think there's a lot of advancement kind of coming our way currently with the artificial intelligence technology that's coming out for images, he said. I've done image identification and image descriptions based just off of pictures. Reading text, recognizing text and images, all of that's coming along very quickly. I've seen a huge kind of leap. So I'm imagining that that will continue to get better. I definitely plan on making use of everything I can in the future just to make my life easier. Really, though, Owen's biggest assistive tool is pride. Owen's first learned of guiding eyes as he was working through the process of learning how to adapt to the world given his vision loss. During his aforementioned orientation and mobility training, it was brought up to him that a guide dog might prove an asset to his everyday life. As soon as he turned 16, Owens explained he started to earnestly look at schools and talking to my orientation mobility instructors about their experience with guide dogs and kept hearing rave reviews for guiding eyes. He interviewed and got into their program, but had to postpone attendance due to extenuating circumstances. He returned after the hiatus to match with Pride, graduating together last summer. It's just been great. I mean, they were at the top of my list. It seems like everyone I talked to felt that way, Owen said, of his experience at Guiding Eyes. It's definitely lived up to my expectations. They've done a ton as far as communicating with me and getting me trained on the whole process. They train some amazing dogs, and the whole thing is obviously free to everyone who needs it and qualifies. So that's just amazing. I mean, the fact of such generous donations from people and companies is amazing. Otherwise, there's no way I could afford it or manage. As for how and what went into uniting with Pride, Owens told me the entire operation is fairly lengthy and comprehensive. The rigor makes sense, as Owens was not only signing up for faithful companionship, so too was the dog. Beyond any formal guide dog training, Owens was keen to emphasize the extremely salient point that Pride needs to receive as much care and courtesy as she gives Owens. She must be tended to like any other dog, fed, watered, walked, and more. Playing fetch, Owens said, is Pride's preferred pastime in their backyard at home. For prospective owners, there are stringent qualifications Guiding Eyes says applicants must meet in order to even garner consideration. Owens explained to me that you have to have kind of a certain amount of capabilities with a long white cane for mobility. Once it's determined that someone's proficiently using a cane, representatives from the organization will then travel to a person's home to interview them in person before doing an observation. They want to see your skills with a cane and just make sure you're aware of all your responsibilities, because it is a big responsibility to have a dog that you're taking care of as your mobility aid, Owens said. And then from there you'll get accepted or not, but I got accepted. The training regimen at the Guiding Eyes campus lasts 2 or 3 weeks, during which time Owens said program goers have to do a good bit of training with their professional trainers and your dog in particular. Dogs and their owners are typically matched based on the human's walking speed and lifestyle, according to Owens. For me, I'm a pretty fast walker, and I'm really active, he said of the life he leads alongside Pride. I'm always out and about moving, so I got matched with an energetic dog that can keep up with me. Owens has parlayed his penchant for activity into distinction. He's recognized as the first world blind skim boarder. There's a hot link for that. Owens showed an interest in board sports early on, picking up skateboarding when he was around 4 years old when he was still fully sighted. He describes skimboarding as being adjacent to surfing, although the skimboard itself is smaller than a surfboard and people don't ride waves in the same manner surfers do. As for logistics, Owens said eyesight isn't wholly necessary to anticipating breaks in the water and other factors. He acquired his skills at a surfing camp for visually impaired youth in North Carolina. For the most part, I'm sorry I ran out of time for this week's reading of Vision News. Be sure to listen next week. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm Doris Hyde reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Vision News is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.